Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. We're live to tape from Richards Farm Restaurant in Casey, Illinois. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Wayne Nelson, let's start with this question. The United States Department of Agriculture on Thursday morning released a long-term outlook that put some numbers out through, frankly, the year 2025, but dealing with the 16 numbers. The change at this point that they're forecasting for the ending stocks by the time we get to the fall of 2017 or for the new crop corn is just 5 million bushels different than the ending stocks for the current year. So how do these numbers get incorporated into the marketplace? And more importantly, how will we use them next week when we get to the Ag Forum from Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think, Todd, that these are good numbers for us to see because they were thinking that we might have more corn acres, might have more, a bigger carryout going into next year, and it gives us a base point to start from here to look at. And it's not near as negative as what we thought it could be and what numbers that some of the trade is talking about right now.
The numbers for soybean, Sherman Newland, did change the ending stocks. However, the average cash price didn't change very much. In fact, went down for next year as opposed to this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're having a big old crop carryout, and then when you plug that in with the new crop looking carryout that they're giving us, I mean, we're looking at probably a lower average price. And in honest opinion, I mean, the acres could actually go up a little bit more from what they said.
So USDA putting about 44 million bushel difference between old crop soybean carryout, or the one that's in the bin now, and new crop, the one that'll be planted. It'll be down 44 million, but still they managed to lower the season's average cash price. Let's talk a little bit about the commodity markets for old crop now at this time. Producers, many of them will have a basis contract in particular, I think, for soybeans, maybe some for corn. What are the things that they should consider today with a couple of good up days in the marketplace for this current week?
I think, you know, if you've got your good basis contract, you got it locked in. We've had some good up days. We're looking right in this area to be making some old crop sales. We don't feel like there's a lot more of upside potential. We don't think it's a new upside breakout. I mean, we're a little bit more concerned about the market selling off here. Watching the crude oil market, it's not doing a whole lot. So we don't see a lot of upside. There's a lot of old crops that still need to be sold. We know that. Basis is still good. Farmers are wanting to sell in through here. I think it's a good place to get some more sales made.
How important is crude oil to the marketplace?
Oh, right now it's been leading the market by the nose, we feel like, for a little bit, because the fund, the money, the crude oil market is a big part of the CRB index, and a lot of the fund traders watch that. It makes up 26% of the CRB index compared to what corn and beans and some of the other commodities make up, roughly 6%. So it's all about money flow and you know, the potential for the funds to want to cover. If they see the crude oil market could rally some, then they may want to cover some of the short positions in the corn and bean market. But if the market's not going to move, then neither will the grains.
So crude oil this week, Wayne Nelson, did manage to rally just a bit. That on the idea that the OPEC nations may get together, actually OPEC and some other nations may get together and freeze, not change their January production levels. The marketplace responded to that, but then realized that, well, it's just a freeze. It's not actually a cut. Still an important point in the story of crude oil, as it may give us insight into what could happen in the future. Do you suppose that those nations will finally begin to free up the market a little bit to ratchet back some supply?
Well, the wild card, Todd, is Iran. First they were out, then they were in, then we're, well, maybe we're in as long as you don't produce more, but maybe we can produce a little more because we haven't been producing. But overall, we're gonna see something get done by these nations. They're taking a real hit on what they're pumping. They need cash, so they don't want to cut back too much. But it is gonna, something is going to happen to a degree here, or else we're going to have a glut and run out of storage.
How tied is the corn market? And I know we talked about the CRB, but how tied really is the corn market, do you think, to crude oil?
It seems to be tied tighter than we think it should be. Corn is an energy. We look, it's ethanol is our main kickover, for our production here. So it does link to it. I'm wondering why we are linking ethanol so close to crude oil, though, because it's the oxygenate. We never talked about the price MTBE before, but now we're talking about the price relationship of ethanol compared to it. Now, I see where we don't go over the 10% blend, and that's hurting us for the extra use of ethanol. But the 10% blend, to me, needs to be there for the oxygenate.
So you're not concerned really about, at this point, about ethanol, although the plants might have to operate maybe with either a loss, I suppose, or really slim margins.
Their margins have been cut quite a bit slimmer, Todd, and we're seeing a lot of the ethanol plants. They're taking corn 2 to 4 hours a day instead of all day long right now. They're wanting to get their inventories down, not knowing what the corn price or what the oil price or the ethanol price is going to be down the road. They don't want too much on hand until the price goes down a little bit in corn.
You're shaking your head here, Sherm, because those hours have been limited at many plants, not all, but some of them. What, in your opinion, is the reason that they would do this?
Some of it could be the corn storage. I mean, they're limited on storage. A lot of them got filled up in the Midwest and during the harvest time, and they're just trying to limit the traffic to there. Like Todd said, maybe the profitability of the ethanol that they're blending, maybe they're trying to slow that down a little bit and hope for better prices down the road.
Look forward into the 2016 growing season. Is there a reason that producers should do anything about pricing 2016 corn or soybeans?
Oh, well, when you look at the carryouts and the acreage potential and what USDA says the average prices may be, I think if you can get some prices up in this $4 area on December corn, that'd be a good place to make some of your first sales if you can. Probably want to do that on paper because the cash price with the basis still isn't all that impressive yet. And same thing with the beans. I mean, we have potential for quite a few bean acres. If we could get the bean price in that $9, $9.10 area on the board, I'd definitely be taking a look at that. With the carryout potential in the South American crop, how good a crop they're having. Our exports are going to be slowing down. So without a weather problem this summer, which, you know, it could happen. I mean, nobody's saying it can't happen, but that's a long way down the road if it will happen. We'd be looking at making some hedges in through here.
We're just half a month away from producers beginning to make the process happen for purchasing crop insurance, Wayne Nelson. Gary Schnittke has been on record many times as saying, don't cut back, don't use this as the cost savings measure. What are you thinking producers should do about crop insurance?
Well, we sure hate to disagree with Gary. He's studied this much closer than most anybody else has. Him and his grad students do a wonderful job. But we agree with him. For the simple reason is 5 out of 5 weather forecasters that ADM Investor Services uses are saying there's going to be some drought, some hot, lots of hot weather, and a varied summer season coming along. Not saying they're going to be a disaster, but there's a lot of very big chance of it. You know, 5 out of 5 is a pretty good percentage to say we could have some weather problems or production problems.
As far as crop insurance goes, I mean, we're looking at, I think guys shouldn't be cutting crop insurance to try and save money on their per acre, you know, on their sheets out there. That's one thing I don't think you want to skimp on, because if we do have, like Wayne said, a weather problem, you're going to want that crop insurance, and it may be very well worth the value of owning it.
What do you think prospects for this growing season might be for producers in your area? When we were at Casey, you talked about some fall tillage that happened, some things that happened in the field that makes you, I think, really positive about the potential size of the coming crop.
Yeah, I mean, with the soil profile, I mean, a lot of folks did a lot of deep ripping this year, alleviated a lot of the problems from compaction from maybe the last few years. The water table has come back up. I mean, if you look at a drought monitor map, most of that has really dissipated quite a bit. So we're starting out with good soil structure and a good water level, at least for the corn crop coming into this year.
turn our attention to another crop really quickly, wheat in the northern hemisphere. There have been some problems, I think, potentially in Ukraine, Russia, that would be ice. And then out in our own wheat areas of Kansas, the Texas Panhandle, some of those places, they're going to 80 degrees. Certainly the winter hardiness will now go away. We are only in the month of February. Is there potential here for wheat, which has been the dog in the marketplace for quite some time, to finally catch?
There is, Todd, and I say that out of respect that the last time we had 70-degree temperatures, this time out in Montana, or this time of year, is we had a freeze that killed the wheat on Mother's Day that year back when. So there is something like that in sort of history that goes to that. But the bad thing of it all is we've got wheat coming out of our ears all around the world.
You mentioned, Sherman, that we have a good prospects for this particular summer for the crop based on where we are today. However, as Wayne had mentioned, 5 of 5 believe that there are some prospects for this El Nino to turn and for it to create some problems in the marketplace. How do farmers capture this or at least think about that as they're moving forward?
I think that's where you got to remain flexible this coming year. I mean, you got to be able to use every tool that's available to you between the cash markets and options. I think you know, if you make some cash sales, you got to watch the weather report, and if you need to come back in and re-own it with some call options, you need to have that available to you.
How often do farmers check the marketplace for an actual sale?
Oh, that's hard to say. I mean, they everybody gets their markets on their phones anymore, you know. Probably once a week at least, I would say.
Is that often enough?
No, no. I mean, I personally look at it every day. Of course, that's my job. But, I think they need to check it every day. I mean, it's going to be one of those years you're really going to stay on your toes to watch the weather reports, watch the markets, have some orders in place above the market in case we do get some of these rallies and these pops to take the emotion out of that sale. And that way, if we do get popped up, you get filled.
I agree. I think that right now, and especially in the near future, and I'm talking of the next 10 days, they should have some orders in to make some sales, whether it's with their broker, whether it's with their elevator or whatever. But we've got a short-term pop here coming in. We do have a head and shoulders on the downside here on the corn that looks like we might be getting a little bit of a rally. Let's have some orders in there so we can market some of this corn. Let's also stop and think, it's the time of year, if you haven't sold much corn, you better be coring that bin one more time and looking at it, because you know, damaged corn don't sell well.
Where would you put those numbers at this point? And you were shaking your head, Sherm, in agreement that they probably ought to have some sale points in place at this time.
Where would we have some price orders? Oh, just anywhere in through here right now. I mean, with a strong basis, I mean, you could probably get 370 to 375 cash corn. I think that's something a guy better take a look at pretty hard. I think the $9 mark cash-wise, if you can get a decent basis, would be where I'd look at. If you're looking at a point on the board, the 890 basis to March is what I'd be targeting to, you know, make your sales off of that, depending on wherever your basis is and where you're going. But those would be the marks I would look at initially.
Do either of you want to be left with old crop corn or soybeans by the time we get to the 1st of April?
Not a lot.
I go along with that thought too, Todd. I don't want an awful lot, but I think we're going to have more than we think we would like to have left, just because the farmers are at levels they're not going to be sellers. I think whether we want to be or not, we have to be thinking about it, because a lot of our customers will.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of farmers, I mean, you talk to the elevator guys, I mean, everybody and their dogs got orders at $4 corn and $9 beans. I mean, and for old crop corn to get to $4, you're really going to have something take place. And right now, we just don't see it.
Let's wrap up. What are your final thoughts for the afternoon? Thanks, by the way, for coming to KZ, Illinois to do one of our Will Ag Outlook panels. If you want to schedule one of those, you can call me 217-333-9697. And don't forget that these two will be over at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 8th day of the month. Wayne Nelson will be up on stage with us, and I know, Sherman, that you'll be there. Bill Gentry and Chuck Shelby will be up on stage with us from your office space. Tickets are just $30. That includes the Beef House lunch, a roll and coffee in the morning, and a dozen of our regular analysts, and probably another 6 or 7 folks that you hear on the air around the outside of our main event partial there, and we sure do look forward to having you with us. So a kind of a final thought from you, Wayne Nelson.
If you haven't sold any old crop corn or beans, it's time to be looking, time to be moving a little bit, try to check those bins.
I agree. I mean, it is a time. I mean, we've had the bounce up in here. We think guys need to be letting it go. And you really need to be flexible this year. So take a look at different ways of being able to do that and just watch the market very close.
Sherman Newland is with Risk Management Commodities. His office is in Hudsonville, Illinois. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. The two of them traveled to Casey, Illinois for one of our Will Ag Outlook panels, and we recorded Commodity Week on the 18th day of February. Earlier in this same week, I talked with Mike Leem, an agricultural consultant based out of the United Kingdom that often makes trips into Russia and Ukraine to check out crops there, in particular the wheat crop. And given the importance that has played in the marketplace over the past couple of weeks, I thought it might be nice to check in on that crop with him. I called him on Skype earlier in the week. You travel and live in Ukraine and Russia. Why is that?
I originally went to Ukraine and Russia 20 odd years ago when the war came down, started doing consultancy and various little projects. And then about 8 years ago, I went to Ukraine full time to support an agronomy service for a UK-based service. And they decided to pull out and I decided to stay. So I sort of split my time between the UK, but also predominantly Russia and up until recently, Ukraine.
And do you still manage the farms?
Not at the moment. We were looking after farms up until 2013, when the hostilities happened, and this is in Ukraine, and things got a little bit crazy for a while there, and effectively investors pulled out and all the projects pretty much ceased, and we took the opportunity to move elsewhere at that time.
So those that would be interested in talking to you as a consultant, how did they get hold of you?
I have a blog, agronomy.ukraine, and a Twitter handle, which is Agronomy Ukraine as well. Essentially, if you Google Agronomy Ukraine and Mike Lee, you'll find her route to my Twitter or blog.
And those who follow me on Twitter also often will see that I have retweeted something that you have put out generally about the wheat crop in Russia and or Ukraine. You've been out and at least were traveling until recently. What's the condition of that crop as we move through the end of the winter months?
Yeah, it's an interesting time at the moment. I mean, Russia, the Russian winter wheat crop going into the winter was very good, in very good condition. And large parts of Ukraine was in very good condition. There was a problem in the south and the east of Ukraine where dryness had delayed germination, and a lot of crop just didn't physically grow in time as it went into the winter. And the snow has been intermittent as we've gone through the winter. It hasn't been that cold. There was a cold spell in January when we got down to about minus 20, minus 25. Which is not that particularly that cold for that part of the world at that time of the year, but there wasn't the snow hadn't fallen in sufficient depth, and at the time it was around about the 26th, 27th of January, people were reporting that snow had fallen and the temperature dropped, but the crop was protected with a blanket of snow. Now there's a difference between snow falling and snow actually accumulating, and what I saw there for about 2 days, 48 hours. Was a period of where crops in central Russia and I suspect cross into eastern Ukraine as well were exposed to cold weather without that protective blanket of snow.
So one of the things that you talked about on your Twitter account was that there wasn't really good insulative value because it wasn't that deep, but there was some snow there. However, it had gotten warm enough that it melted, and then we have now ice on top of this rather than snow on top of it. And the ice, of course, wouldn't have the same type of insulating value.
Yeah, it's last week temperatures have risen quite dramatically, really. I mean, it's well above freezing. It's 8 degrees today in central Russia, and rain as well. You know, rain across the whole of central Russia, Oryol, Belgorod, Kursk, Lipetsk, up into Moscow. Everyone we were talking to was talking about rain, and the rain has the effect of collapsing the snow structure. And then the water melts, or the meltwater gets beneath the snow, and it pools and it ponds and it freezes. In itself, it's not a catastrophe as such. It really depends on how how permeable the ice might be to gaseous exchange. You know, if the ice is cracked or there's straw sticking out through the ice, that can be sufficient to allow the gases to get in and for the crop to survive. But even this week and today, we were seeing more rain, more wet weather, more melt, and it's forecast to get cold again as we move into the end of this week and next week. And that water, which doesn't freely drain in the frozen soils, tends to sit in pools and ponds and will freeze if it hasn't already. And the difficulty is to be able to assess that, because there is snow still there, so you can't actually find, you can't go out and dig beneath the ice extensively across the fields. But everywhere we've looked, we've encountered ice to greater or lesser degrees, and in my mind, that's has the potential to cause an issue with the crop.
We won't know for some time. How soon do you think we'll have an idea of when this is a problem, if it is a problem?
Yeah, well, I'm actually just writing up our schedule for crop tours this year, and I'm going to try and kick off the second, third week in March. Although I suspect we might find that we have a late snowfall and we can't get out until April. But certainly from the 1st of April is the real proper time that you can get a good look at crops. Having said that, Ukraine's Ministry of Agriculture today published their latest assessment of the crop condition. But realistically, I think it's just an academic exercise. It's really not until late March, early April, that you can get out across the fields and get a real good look at what's going on.
We can find some of that information, but it is part of your consultancy group. How do people get hold of that, and if they want to know more about it?
I'm literally in front of me right now, writing up the schedule and the latest blog, which will probably go out tomorrow, just to start to outline that. We're looking for an annual subscription to cover us through the year, to try and build up sufficient income so that we can start to invest in this and extend the business through Ukraine and Russia and hopefully into Kazakhstan in the near future as well. So we're looking to try and build on what we started last year. To provide useful, real, boots on the ground type information that works in tandem with the information that's published, satellite data and government data and so on. But we'll also be selling individual reports, because not everybody's interested in every crop at every point. And I'll be posting details on that on my blog, if not tonight, certainly tomorrow.
That's Mike Lee. He's an agricultural consultant based out of the United Kingdom, but that often travels into the Ukraine and Russia to check out the Black Sea wheat area. If you're interested in learning more from him, you can visit his blog. It's at agronomyukraine.blogspot.com. Just search Google for Agronomy Ukraine, Mike Lee, and you'll find it. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9, HD3, Urbana.